Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we came, became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's the kick. The super sub has done it again. And Hullamore are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast review of 2015. Today myself, Jane Buster, will look back on what was a very eventful year for Motherwell Football Club and an eventful year for the podcast guys as well, I would say. Welcome along, guys.
Cheers. How do
you? Not bad at all, not bad at all. Happy New Year, Buster. I know that you didn't make it yesterday, so I didn't get the chance to wish you a Happy New Year.
Yeah, same here, sales guys. Working, boozing and that caught me, sorry, nah. I slept in for a 7 o'clock kick-off or whatever it was, a 9pm kick-off or whatever it was, aye.
And you won't be the last one to do so. Well, we'll start by just kind of cataloguing the year, and 2015 started pretty dismally, it's fair to say. Under the tenureship of Ian Barraclough, we started on New Year's Day with an absolute hammering at Hamilton. And things kind of just continued to be pretty depressing throughout the course of that month. Jay, looking back, that's possibly just about as grim as it got through the year. And that was the first month.
Yeah, it's a nice start to the podcast. but no, that's it. I think, you know, I've got the results up here to refresh the memory. And I noticed that, you know, the week's ending 2014, you know, we get two wins, so I think we probably went into the new year a bit optimistic. I didn't go on New Year's Day because I had plans with it being New Year's Day rather than the second like it was this year, but I remember just hearing the goals. I think, I know you were there, Sparrow, can't remember if you were there, Buster, but I do remember there being a bit of chat during the game and stuff like that on Facebook and stuff, and it just sounded like the most depressing game of all time. And I think if ever, you know, I think if ever you were maybe going to sum up the tenure of Ian Barraclough, it might have been in that game, you know, that kind of, even that period of time, a couple of good results, looking all right, you start to think, oh, maybe things are going well, and then absolute, you know, absolute chaos. 5-0 away to your local rivals is just, it's just dreadful. And then, of course, it didn't get much better.
Yeah, Buster, the January obviously brought that very busy transfer window and number of new faces coming in. I suppose that the legacy of that would be Marvin Johnson, who's went on to be an excellent acquisition for the club, but a number of these guys, it didn't quite work out quite as well there, did it?
Well, as far as I can see, through what I've got here, January was, again, as Jay says, rubbish. A few players came in, like you says. Marvin Johnson's probably the pick of the bunch, as you say. I suppose, I'm trying to think, when did McDonald come in afterwards? Actually, he was actually running about the beginning of March or something. But as you say, it was a rubbish, absolute rubbish month football-wise. Since you asked you, again, in the Hamilton game, working booze caught up with me and I slept in and I woke up at 4:30 to find we were 4-0 down just to catch the last goal in the last minute or whenever it was. Aye, there's a pattern developing. The first week in January doesn't agree with me, I don't think, you're right. The, you know, the, looking at the results for January, as you said, if it wasn't for the fact we drew with St Johnstone in the last day, the postponement in the middle of January would probably have been our best result. So I think, as you say, the best thing coming from January probably would have been Marvin Johnson then.
In saying that, a shout out for, I mean, considering what we were talking about in the podcast, which we recorded yesterday, so that's what, Monday, depending when this goes out, the stats that you were throwing up, Sparra, with Stephen Pearson, I think I'm right in saying Piero joined mid-January.
Yeah, I think so.
So for me, I think over the piece, Pearson has probably been the best thing to come out of January, rather than, yes, Johnson's had his moments, particularly during the playoffs, but I think what Pearson's done at Fir Park since he's came back would certainly be my highlight of January. Not that there's too many.
Yeah, the other guys that arrived in January, Louis Lang, who obviously earned a new deal, and everyone was very happy when he did extend his stay. Conor Grant didn't quite work out. George Long, I'm on the fence with that one a wee bit. Tony Straker, who was an absolute superstar, we were never going to be able to hold on to him. Mark O'Brien, his loan was extended for reasons unknown. Ayama went out
as well in the beginning of first day of February, or something. Nathan Thomas came in as well, mind.
I think that was when we started to kind of work out that Ian Barraclough's signing policy was to sign folk and then sign replacements for the folk he'd already signed. Because I think, you know, was Nathan Thomas not along the lines of he didn't think that Marvin Johnson was going to come off or something along those lines? He thought he probably wasn't going to get Johnson to sign Nathan Thomas instead. I think I'm right in saying that. And then obviously we ended up with both, and Nathan Thomas just kind of, I think he played, came off the bench once and then vanished into obscurity. And that seemed to be a theme that kind of Barraclough carried on with, you know, strikers coming in to replace strikers, goalkeepers coming in to replace goalkeepers. So we should have seen the warning signs then.
Yeah, I can remember seeing him in an under-20s game, possibly around April, May time. Thomas, and there was a free kick about 40 yards out, which there was nothing surer that he was going to hit, and there was nothing surer that it was going very close to out the park and out the ground itself. And he did, and sure enough, he was hooked about a minute later, and I was just like, this guy is nowhere near a footballer. And I think about 2 days later, we actually announced that he wasn't even going to see out the end of the season. We just had decided he could go back to wherever he came from. Yeah, so that one didn't quite work out, but I suppose that there was a few there that have continued to be fairly important parts of the setup at Motherwell. The following month, we had our first kind of big guest on the podcast with the club general manager, Alan Burrows, coming on. It was a very popular and well-received podcast, and Alan's come back on since then too. And it kind of, I suppose that did kind of set the tone for us looking elsewhere. Looking at the following week, we had Andrew Wilson on, and over the course of the year, we've been very lucky to have some really good names associated with the club on.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think the Alan Burrows one, it's still weird calling him Alan Burrows. The floor one was really good. I think that it was, you know, I think it got what 4,000 or 5,000 listens or something along those lines. It was brilliant, because I think it's that, you know, you can release all the statements you want in the world. You can post up the odd kind of post on Steelman Online, which essentially, let's be honest, is just a statement anyway. But I think, you know, given guys like Flo, you know, Les Hutchison, whoever it is, you know, there's something a lot more personal, a lot more conversational, and a lot more entertaining and informative when you've got folk, you know, talking like we're talking now. So yeah, it was almost like, I suppose, validation. You know, at that point, I think the podcast had been on the go for, what, 2 or 3 months. So to get someone, you know, that high up in the club on the podcast, and then to get the response it got, that was certainly a highlight.
It certainly was. The you know, I think the fact that we're old friends with him, you know, certainly helped a bit. But as you said, to have been gone such a short time, you know, to get the club so involved as they were at that point as well, you know, with some of the other people had on previously and afterwards, it was something I don't think any of us really expected when we started this, more or less for, you know, the sake of having a conversation just to laugh and see if anybody really wanted to listen to us talk our rubbish.
The results in February didn't particularly improve. I can remember the county game was seen as a real test of whether or not we were genuine relegation strugglers, and it was proven to be the case that we were. A 3-2 defeat up there, a rare game that you see Fraser Kerr getting on the score sheet in that one as well, to kind of haul us back in it, but at 3-2, but we can make it all the way back to level the score, and followed that up with a 1-0 defeat against Dundee. And then a game that I actually kind of view as a turning point in last season, the 2-1 victory over Inverness at Fir Park. It was a real scrappy affair. Lionel Ainsworth grabbing the winner with, I think, 5 or 6 minutes to go. I know that we didn't go on to push on and get enough results to avoid the playoff position, but that was a kind of sign, Jay, that positive times could be ahead.
Well, as I said earlier, I think that Barraclough's reign, last season and then perhaps the start of this season as well, has been peppered with those moments, peppered with those kind of games where you think, oh, that's it, things have clicked, or, you know, he's got the personnel right, he's got his team right, suddenly things have happened. It happened at the end of December 2014. We were then atrocious throughout January and most of February. The game you're talking about, yeah, perhaps a turning point. I know that March and April we had an upturn in results, but of course you were still losing games. We still went on to have, I'm sure we'll talk with them, we still went on to have abysmal performances against the likes of Thistle, against the likes of Hackies, and ultimately ended up in the playoffs. So I think that, the game you're talking about, although at the time it might have felt as though we'd turned a corner or Barraclough had got things right, I think, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it was just perhaps positive attitude, perhaps wanting that to be the case. Of course we all wanted it to be the case, but perhaps we were a bit carried away, because at the end of the day when you look back, that was kind of the story of Barraclough's reign. Pretty much atrocious throughout, with some great performances just kind of sprinkled throughout.
Yeah, sorry Bust, I look at the kind of results following that. There was a draw against Kilmarnock, we lost 2-1 after going ahead at Pittodrie, then 1-3 in the bounce, 4-0 against Aki's, 2-1 at Kelly, and 5-0 against St Mirren. So it really did look like it was a case that we had far too much quality to be.
Well, yeah, no, that's it. I mean, that's a really good example. The home win 4-0 against Aki's, and then the 5-0 win against St Mirren. I'm pretty sure both of them were Friday night games. I know the Aki's game was.
St Mirren was a midweek, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was just, the football we played, okay, we were playing against two fairly poor sides, particularly St Mirren, but we absolutely blew them away. It was tremendous. We absolutely destroyed them. And at that point, you were thinking, right, good, everything's clicked at right, exactly the right moment. Obviously, around this time, Ross County are picking up points as well, but you're thinking, if we can keep this going, if we can keep, not just the winning games, but winning games the way we were winning at that point, winning at Rugby Park, going away to Rugby Park, beating them 2-1, as we said, beating Aki's and St Mirren, absolutely destroying them. If you could have kept that going, then you're looking at it thinking, we're not going to be in the playoffs here, we're going to, 10th, 9th, wherever. And then, of course, we followed it up with two absolutely bottle-crashing performances at Fir Hill and New Douglas Park, which were among, it was the sublime to the ridiculous within a matter of weeks, because particularly the Fir Hill game, it was just, we absolutely shot a brick.
I seem to remember, just bringing it back to the beginning of February as well, the Ross County game, I seem to remember, I think, I didn't go up, so I can't really comment on it, but I seem to remember us talking about how the performance was not a lot better. I think that was one of the first times we actually had a performance, despite the fact we lost. And then, obviously, as we came back to Fir Park, we could be after Dundee, and then, as you say, from there, it was Inverness onwards, as you say, was where it sort of was looking really good. The Aberdeen defeat, was that the one where there was a mix-up in defence and,
yeah,
the score in the centre-half ran each or whatever. Other than that, from Inverness onwards, it was, 5-6 matches there were looking great, and that's when a ton of us all went to Partick Thistle expecting we were on a good run, obviously, expecting us to turn up and put in a decent performance and come away with a result. And, as Jay rightly says, I think that was one of the worst games I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
It was incredible, wasn't it? The, the disappointment of that followed up with the yet another meek performance at Aki's, so much so that we've cancelled the Player of the Year award for the podcast.
That's right, I thought
that's right, yeah.
It was the scene of that, yeah, that's right.
I was actually just looking at there thinking, I can't remember if I was at that or not, but that's the one where, as you say, we decided we'd go with the unders because we used to be near a few unders games, and that was the one where I can remember everybody says, we can't give this to MD.
it was just strange description act and stuff like that. You could not possibly give a Player of the Year award to any other player, having watched those performances. The Thistle game, I think, annoyed me more because I hate the cliches that folk hit at me, or these, you know, ideas that aren't strictly true. Like, you know, the idea that every time Motherwell has a big crowd, we absolutely shit it. But that Thistle game was a, if you were going to use an example, that was it. Because I think we had, you know, what, 1,500 or something at the game. We had that entire stand for Motherwell fans. We outnumbered the Thistle fans. It should have been a game that we should have been, you know, particularly after the performances we'd had up until that point. I think there was so much optimism, bouncing atmosphere, everybody up for it, apart from the players on the park. But as I said, that kind of thing was, you know, ultimately the story of Barraclough's career at Motherwell.
I suppose the Thistle game or the Aki's game didn't confirm the playoffs. That was confirmed at St Mirren, and Christ, that was another depressing afternoon of football. Even after taking the lead, completely undeserved, against a team that were well relegated by that point, we somehow managed to lose two goals from the 84th minute onwards. To lose the game, I think at that point Kilmarnock had already went 3 or 4-1 up at Partick Thistle, so it was already confirmed that we were going to be playing in that playoff. When the boy Marlon hit the ball from about 40 yards right into the top corner, just to add a wee bit of extra misery onto the whole affair. And
I'm sorry,
on you go.
I was going to say, I can't even mind if I was at that game either, but I've got a memory of goldfish. But I'm looking at the stats here. I slept in, probably. looking at the stats here, and obviously their match reports and whatever, and it just says Marlon, obviously last minute goal, 90+7, and then Pearson booked 90+8. How much injury time was played in this game?
There was a reasonably serious injury, and there was a lot of.
Yeah.
I can't remember, one of the Saints players was stretchered off in the second half, and then McDonald got sent off, and it was a red card that was rescinded. Remember, he wouldn't have played in the playoff.
Aye.
If it wasn't for that red card being overturned.
Yeah, I mean, I remember bits and pieces of the game. I think by that point as well, you know, as you said, I mean, I think you've also got to remember around this time, you're also watching, you know, the likes of Ross County. Ross County went in a ridiculous run at that point. So I think when you were going and you were watching us put in the kind of performances we did against, you know, Hamilton Aggies and Partick Thistle, coupled with the idea that Ross County just seemed to be all borderline invincible at that point, or at least that's what it seemed when you were checking SportsScene or checking your phone to see what the score was with Ross County every week. So I think even before the St Mirren game, I think at least my general feeling was that, you know, the playoffs were happening regardless of what happened. But, you know, as you said, it was one of those games where, you know, when you go 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go, you think we've got a fighting chance here. But again, typical Motherwell.
As you say, I think that by this point as well, you know, I think we all knew it was coming, but just to go back to you again, February, when Ross County,
you're obsessed with this County game.
Are we going to honestly get to about November and you're going to go, just to go back to February for a quick second again?
Well, I'll find a link somehow, I'll bet you.
Did Conor Grant not score a great free kick in that game?
He did, aye.
Aye.
I did, but I was going to say, it was around about that time that they basically mirrored every one of your wins, and any time maybe come up to Partick Thistle and Hamilton Aggies, you know, at that point, any time that, you know, we drop points, they just seem to keep going. And, you know, as you say, they were looking invincible, but again, it all started through when they beat us, and they just seemed to steamroll our teams.
But remember, just as we'd completely given up, they played at home at St Mirren, And again, St Mirren were relegated by this point. County went 1-0 up and St Mirren somehow came back and won the game 2-1. And you're just thinking, after I think we had played Kilmarnock on the Friday night, and you're thinking maybe our luck's just in here and we might manage to avoid this. As it transpired, obviously, it didn't work out and we headed into the playoffs. I can remember recording about that time and there was a certain degree of fear going into it. I think Motherwell teams traditionally have been very overawed going to Ibrox. I think most of us knew when it came to the playoffs that it was going to be Rangers that would go through. Despite their poor results for quite a bit of the 2014-2015 season. And as it transpired, it was Rangers. And Jay, I'm struggling to think of many better nights than the one in that Thursday evening.
I mean, you know, you're right when you say about there being a bit of a, you know, a fear factor or whatever in the build-up. I think, firstly, it's Ibrox, it's Rangers, they're Rangers, you know, I mean, in their previous incarnation, we've not exactly had the best of times against them. It seemed all set up. It doesn't matter how optimistic you are as a Motherwell fan, it's hard not to listen to what's in the papers. It was just, the whole thing was built around the fact that Rangers were going to turn up, destroy us, and then saunter back into their rightful place in the top flight. And I suppose, again, going back to, you know, the kind of bottle-crashing performances we had at Fir Hill and at New Douglas Park, I just couldn't see us doing it. I had visions of us doing the same there, which we'd done with far better teams. I know Rangers would have been better in the past, but we've had far better players who went to Ibrox in the past, or at least I thought at that point, because at that point we weren't playing particularly well, who have went and just completely capitulated. So it was... it wasn't a bad night.
Certainly was the buster. You were lucky you didn't sleep in through that one.
Well, just to take it back to February for this game. No. As you say, I can't really remember now, but I think Rangers ended up finishing fourth in the championship.
I think it was a couple of,
I'm cheering it as I go here, but or trying to at least. But I know they had at least a couple of extra games to play. And I'm thinking, hopefully, one of these teams beats Rangers. It's Queen of the South and Hibs, wasn't it? I'm thinking, hopefully, one of these teams beats Rangers. But looking back at it now, I don't know if we'd come up against the Hibs or a Queen of the South if we'd in there with the same mentality, you know, the same bottle or whatever it was at that point. You know, I don't know if we'd have managed to win those games. As Jay says as well, we were going to Ibrox. I don't think I was going to go until they announced, you know, it was a fiver a ticket. You know, if it had been 25 quid or 20 quid, I'd have probably scrapped it and thought, nah, I'm not going there, I'm not paying that to see this. But when it was announced it was a fiver, you know, I was straight in about it. You know, that's again proving the point of the Fitbit pricing, you know, there it was, been changing my mind, but just because it was cheap as anything. But as you say, it was one of the best football nights, certainly on a Thursday anyway, because any time we usually play on a Thursday, it was in one of the European competitions and we usually get pumped. So it was unreal, and I think as well that was the one time that, you know, everybody in Lanarkshire praised Ian Barraclough for his tactical genius. The tactics that day were absolutely spot on.
Well, I don't think it was even. It wasn't just the tactics. I think the way he conducted himself around those ties. I think maybe perhaps because we were just so used to, you know, the kind of the Stuart McCall, as good a manager as he was for us, as much as we might have liked him, it was very much, you know, almost pandering to Rangers at times. It was all about them. It was never about us. Whereas Ian Barraclough just, you know, made it all about us, made it all about what we were going to do. And yeah, tactically it was spot on. And that night at Ibrox, I think we've all got those, you know, we all like to celebrate a goal. We celebrate some more than others. I think we'll all have those kind of a choice few that we can remember going absolutely tonto over. And although the first two goals in the first half, obviously it was a good bounce about because you went 1-0 then 2-0 up at Ibrox. I think because they were down the other end, it was maybe a delayed reaction because you couldn't quite see if the ball was in. And I suppose at half time you're also thinking, right, just don't lose this now, because there still was that fear factor. But you know, to go into that second half and for Lionel Ainsworth to score that goal early in the second half in front of the Mullum support, I am struggling to think of a goal that I've celebrated quite as much as that.
Yeah, I was quite lucky to see the rest of the game after it, to be honest.
one of the lasting memories I've got as well is, again at half time, 2-0 up, and you know, I went to the toilet or the bystand or something, and walking through there, seeing people you know, and just seeing how happy they were. I mean, you'd think it would finish there and then. Just to see everybody smiling, everybody, you know, shaking hands, high-fiving each other, hugging each other. As I say, you know, at this point, we're a quarter of the way through the fixture. But that'll always stick with me, just how people I'd maybe not seen in a while as well, just like, oh, how you doing? This is great, isn't it?
There's a real element of that, because you think back to the second leg and the party we had here before the game, and there was quite a lot of faces that hadn't been seen or certainly hadn't went to the football with us for a while, and it was just a kind of siege mentality. We just, us versus them, and we had to win. It was just, it felt so, so important at the time, and it was so, so special to win these two games.
Well, I think there's also the fact that I think that, you know, there will be Mullow fans who will say that they expected us to win the ties, and there may be one or two who are telling the truth when they say that, but I think the vast majority had that fear from experience. You know, I think maybe a lot had maybe bought into to what the media were saying and things like that, or again, had looked at what we had done at Fir Hill and Accies and thought, how can this team go to Ibrox and keep it together? And I think even at 3-1 into that second leg, I remember sitting, you know, before the game, as you're talking about, and the chat, although there was that siege mentality and everybody was up for it, the chat was still, right, as long as we don't concede an early goal and things like that. It wasn't right, we're 3-1 up, we're at home now, let's go and do them. It was more, right, come on, we need to keep it together. If they score, oh shit, and all that kind of stuff. It was just, I think it was a really unique thing as well. You know, it was unlike anything. You know, it wasn't like a cup game, it wasn't a cup final, because of course it was over two legs, and it was perhaps more important than a cup final. We'll never know, you know, we'll never know what may have happened had we went down. But, you know, I think that, you know, just the whole idea, the club has always spent the year going on and on about the financial future of the club and things like that, and I think there was just so many different ingredients to it. You know, the stage was set, the entire world expected Rangers to you know, just go up in consecutive seasons and take their rightful place in the top flight, and it was just all geared up for them to do that. And again, even going into the tie, two goals up into the second leg, I was convinced that we were probably going to lose the second leg. The question was just, would we lose it by a low enough margin that we would still win the tie overall?
Yeah,
as you mentioned the club there, gee, I think, you know, obviously they played their part in this as well, because, you know, Alan Burrows stuck his heels in when they wouldn't give us any more tickets for Ibrox. You know, they tell them, well, that's fine, you're getting 800 seats or whatever it was. And I think if you know, they turned up on a Sunday to a full stand, you know, they'd maybe been a bit, maybe buoyed them on a bit more, but, you know, it's probably seen three quarters of that stand empty, a wee strip at the side. You know, it's not going to be the same as having, you know, what is it, 4,000 at Stanhods? 4,000, they're the mutants all shouting at you.
Although, another token, if there had been 4,500 of them sitting in that stand and we beat them 3-0 like we did, it would have been absolutely brilliant.
Well, a bit up until the Mullow fans invaded the park, and then it would have been an absolute riot. But no, I mean, that's a good point. I've got to be honest, I actually completely forgot about that. There's so many different, you know,
positive aspects about those playoffs that you're remembering, you know, the goals in the first leg, the second leg, etc., the twist and shout, all that kind of stuff. I completely forgot about the ticket situation. You know, we said it at the time, but it needs to be said again. The media, Rangers, everybody was, you know, shouting about how disgraceful this was, how shocking, how dare, you know, a club like Motherwell possibly do such a thing to the glorious Glasgow Rangers. But, you know, the club and Flo, of course, deserve a lot of credit for that because, you know, they refused to back down and it was entirely the right decision.
How
especially
seeing
as how they're going about the finances, you know, that an extra, I mean, I know it was that only a fiver or was that a tenner, I think it was, wasn't it?
We were a tenner and a fiver, I'm sure, a 15 and a fiver or something like that.
I think it was a tenner, but even, you know, another 3,000 tenners, bit of money in the door for Motherwell as well. And, you know, obviously, when they've been told we're not getting an extra, you know, what was it, 500 tickets or something we asked for, they said no. And then, you know, as I say, well done at the club for just digging their heels in and saying, well, that's fine, you're getting 800, 900 tickets, that's the end of it.
Looking back, how significant do you think that playoff victory was? I know we don't have access to finances and stats like that, but had we been relegated and had, I don't know whether it would have been the case that Ian Barraclough would have remained in charge, or we would have maybe sought out experience to try and get a quick return, but there's clearly no guarantee of that, given the likes of Hibs and, well, Rangers wouldn't have been because Rangers would have been promoted. But you know what I mean, there's plenty of quality in that championship and it would have been very difficult to find our way back out. Do you think that maybe in 10, 15 years we'll look back and that kind of result and think that perhaps kept the club in the upper echelons of Scottish football, or it ensured the club had a future? Would it have been that drastic? Do you believe that if we had made the drop and lost that playoff?
I suppose it all depends on what kind of theory you subscribe to, in particular with the Well Society. I mean, whenever we talk about it, I know that there's folk who kind of suggest that Motherwell fans will only join the Well Society when, you know, it's a do-or-die situation. So, I mean, I suppose you could put the argument across that if we got relegated and didn't come up after, or, you know, after a few months of the next season, we were looking a bit like St Mirren at the current moment, would we, you know, would the finances have started to dip? Would the club had rang the, you know, the emergency bells, and would Motherwell fans had signed up to the, would the Well Society have been a success? You know, because suddenly we're in this financial predicament and more fans need to put their hand in the pocket. It's really hard to tell. I don't subscribe to the idea that, you know, there is such a thing as financial Armageddon for any club as long as they do things right. If we went down and we had to, you know, sell all our highest paid players, bring through the youth players, and it meant that we spent 5 years, 10 years, 15 years in the first division, so be it. We would still have went, we would have still been doing the podcast. That doesn't bother me in the slightest. I don't think there would have been any financial difficulties or any sort of oblivion had we, as long as we took the right financial decisions.
I'm on the other side of the fence, to be honest with you. Again, as you said, we don't obviously have any access to, you know, any papers or anything that would tell us any figures or anything like that. But honestly, I do believe that, you know, maybe not, as you say, an Armageddon, but things would have changed drastically. We'd probably been worse than St Mirrena just now. I know, as you say, it wouldn't have been a problem if we'd spent 20 years down there. But I think that as we're talking about crowds and stuff like that, you know, one thing I do notice is the Motherwell crowd doesn't get any bigger, no matter how well we're doing. You know, it doesn't really get any bigger. But I think if we drop any lower, or if we do eventually drop or whatever at any point, you'll see people who basically won't come back. You know, that way, as you say, Jay, you know, it's not so much a financial Armageddon sort of thing, but the budgets would have to have been drastically realigned. And you know, if we were in that division just now, when I could see us, you know, having to hold open trials or something like that, you know, for players, because I just don't see where the finances would have been. Television money, and obviously that would have been cut as well. But as you say, that was just my nightmare interpretation of what would have happened if we did get relegated. You know, you never know, we could have been fine, you know, could have come straight back up, you know, nothing probably would have changed maybe, but that was just, you know, that was the way I was thinking it was going to go. And as you say, I don't believe there wouldn't have been a club to support, you know, but I think if at that point we did go down and we had to, you know, realign all the finance and stuff, we could have dropped a division or two further, I think, to be honest with you.
Oh, no, I mean, I think we're actually essentially arguing the same point. I mean, in terms of finances, would our relegation have put us in a really difficult position in terms of coming back up in terms of being competitive, in terms of being able to, you know, have players like Marvin Johnson, like Stephen Pearson, like Scott McDonald? Of course, we could have been down, we could have got relegated again, we could have ended up in the second division in a few years. That can happen to any club. I mean, we up until recently we would have said it couldn't have happened. It could have happened to any club apart from Rangers and Celtic. We've seen it happen to Rangers, albeit for different reasons. So, you know, yes, in footballing terms, would things have got worse? Probably, because we would have been in a very difficult division with what we now know to be a bit of an innate manager with no real, you know, ability in terms of getting a consistent run of games and stuff like that. But in terms of finances, as long as you cut your cloth accordingly, you'll be fine. I remember at the time there was one or two posts and Steelmen online that just, I couldn't believe, you know, folks saying that if we lost the playoffs, if we went down, they wouldn't be back at Fir Park and things like that. But that says more about them than it does about MDL. So at the end of the day, if there are folk who sit and listen to this podcast, if they love Motherwell enough that they're prepared to sit and listen to the three of us talk shit for almost an hour or perhaps even more every week, then it suggests that they love the club enough that, you know, they're going to go regardless of what division they're in. And I think that's my point. Yes, finances would have had to be cut, but would there have been financial difficulty? I don't believe there would have been. I think we would have, might have been the wake-up call we would have needed to stop the stupid top six cup run budgeting we were doing every year anyway. We would have cut our cloth accordingly and we would have got on with it. It's all the, you know, the ideas of administration, liquidation, oblivion, Armageddon. To me, that's just nonsense.
I think, as you say, Zen, essentially we are probably talking about the same thing there, but you mentioned it there as well. Knowing the club, they probably would have still budgeted for a top six and a cup semi. So, you know, who knows how it would have went.
The summer brought further former players that followed on from Brian Martin and Kevin Twaddle being on over the course of the previous season. Jim Patterson, Steve Dykstra, Rob McKinnon, Richie Foran all gave up their time, and it was great fun really catching up with guys that never when we started that we would believe we would get access to, never mind they would actually come back on. We've still got likes of Sean Teal to catch up with to get his 1-11, and these guys are more than willing to do it. We'll not kind of summarise talking to each of these guys individually, Buster, but it was a real privilege for us to get access to these guys, and more so to actually for these guys to want to come back on at later dates as well. It was pretty touching, actually.
Yeah, as you say, it's throughout the year we spoke to, I can't even mind how many it is, don't get me wrong, I missed one or two of them as well there, but you know, even just having spoke to Kevin Twaddle now three or four times, you know, he's a cracking guy. You know, he's more than willing to have a chat any time. He's always, you know, he said to us as well, you know, we'd meet up before, you know, whatever game it was. Again, I missed that game, slept in or whatever. but as you say, even talking to guys like Richie Foran, who, you know, obviously loved this time here. I think he said, you know, looking back, it was his biggest mistake leaving. But him, Steve Dykstra, who was, you know, a great guy, clearly a bit bonkers, but a great guy. It's just something that, as you say, you never dreamed happened. People always say, or you always hear the cliche, never meet your heroes. But, you know, having a word with two or three of these guys, it's putting that right out of the water because they're all gentlemen as well.
Jay, I'm sure you echo these sentiments.
Oh, I think it's also important to say, you know, obviously we'll pick up listeners as we go. So if MD's not been, you know, either go to YouTube and search for the MFC podcast channel and check out some of the 1-11s, particularly Rob McKinnon's, because his team was outrageous. I think, what was it, something like Cooper, Bosfeld, Gascoigne and Lambert in the middle of the park. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But, you know, check those things out and go on the website, you know, the podcast website, because some of the podcasts with ex-players have just been absolutely brilliant. And, you know, just like what Buster was saying, I think that the thing that kind of stands out for me is that it doesn't seem to matter what player we were talking to, you know, the circumstances around us, them leaving the club or how long they were at the club, there is always, you know, an underlying genuine affection for Motherwell, which, you know, I think is, I wouldn't say surprising. I think in some cases it's surprising. Guys like Brian Martin, Rob McKinnon, etc., you can maybe think, okay, they were there a long time. They're probably, you know, most known for their spells there. So fair enough. But, you know, when you listen to guys like Kevin Twaddle, the way he talks about Motherwell, you know, for a guy who, in the grand scheme of things, wasn't at the club for a massive amount of time, even, you know, Sean Teal, who, for, you know, obviously despises Pat Nevin and John Boyle and obviously didn't have the best time at the club, still, you know, talked really, really highly about it. And I think that's testament to the club, you know, as a whole. Not to any particular personnel or the fans or anything like that, but, you know, the aura of the club or the atmosphere of whatever it is, there does seem to be this, you know, something that links all these ex-players and it has a genuine affection for it.
We'll move on and we'll look at, I don't really want to go through it month by month, but just to look at the first couple of months of the new season, or what is the 2015-2016, the current campaign. The most notable thing I would imagine we'd all talk about over the summer is the vast number of players arriving at the club. We did lose some big players, guys like Lee Irwin, John Sutton, but the amount that came in was quite staggering at times, and it just never seemed to stop. You would think that the last deal had been done and then two more would arrive the next day. We had kind of described the January transfer window as like none we had ever seen before it. At Motherwell, it kind of took you back to the Harry Campman days with the tractor and the pitch, didn't it?
It was, I mean, Barraclough was a hoarder, essentially, during that summer. It was outrageous, some of the signings he was making. But, you know, he can't be held solely responsible. Whoever it was that was, you know, allowing some of those transfers, it was ridiculous. And we now are, obviously, we're now in a situation where we can kind of get rid of a lot of those players. But we're going to have to, because, you know, everybody, I don't think there was any Motherwell fans that were particularly, you know, they were looking at the squad we already had and they were thinking, right, why do we need Theo Robinson? You know, why do we need Craig Sampson? Why do we need these guys? It makes absolutely no sense, you know, to be bringing these guys in. Particularly at a time when, you know, you're trying to purvey the idea that the club needs a strong financial footing, it needs the fans to commit to the Well Society. So it was kind of gone at that stage, I think, in the season to have, or in the year, to have, you know, you would go onto the Motherwell website and one story would be a statement from Les Hutchison saying how it was absolutely crucial that you joined the Well Society because the club needed a steady financial future with fan ownership. And then the next story was how we had signed, you know, yet another striker.
Buster, it did get to the stage where you just kind of had to sit back and laugh. To be fair, it did seem a bit kind of directionless, we'll put it that way.
Yep. Again, did you say it was kind of exciting? Obviously, you know, I think it was the beginning of June that we started to bring players in. I think, if I look up, so I think Joe Chalmers was the first one who came in. You know, everybody was like, fair dues, you know, young left back, he was on Celtic's books, you know, like, can't it be too bad, let's see what happens. Then, as you say, we just started to bring them in left, right and centre. Clarkson, Wes Fletcher, Kieran Kennedy signed on, was he on loan last season, I think? Anyway, he came in permanently as well. Louis Langsley, that's who I was thinking. Kieran Kennedy also came in. Louis Moult. And again, some of these players have obviously played their part, and, you know, but there's guys like Theo Robinson, Craig Sampson, who've not even seen Craig Sampson, for example. So it's
that's when you don't consider guys like Jake Taylor, who came in on loan. I know that both the goalkeeper Ripley and Liam Grimshaw have both come in and played an important part in the first half of this season. But it was, as you say, Joe Chalmers kind of set the tone for the hoarding, and then it didn't really stop. Even, I suppose, right up to signing James McFadden just before Christmas, with the signings show no. And now the transfer window's open, we can start and do it all over again.
Exactly, exactly. I think it's, you know, just to emphasise the point, you know, of the hoarding sort of thing as well. When it come to, you know, mid-September, when I thought I was going to sign Craig Sampson, there was not one person that, you know, I think any of us spoke to who could put a reason on why we'd actually sign Craig Sampson.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the reason that a lot of people tried to give was that, oh, Conor Ripley might go back in January. But, you know, you don't sign, I mean, presumably Sampson would have been on a half-decent wage. You know, he's an SPL-level goalkeeper. You don't bring a third-choice goalkeeper in to sit about for 3 or 4 months because you might lose your on-loan goalkeeper in January. That's an absolute nonsense reason. And if that, and, you know, that backs up exactly what you're saying, Buster, because that was the only reason Emdy could think of. We're going to lose Conor Ripley in 4 months, so we're going to have to bring this guy in, and then, you know, as luck would have it, we've not lost Conor Ripley anyway. But I would like to think that even if we were going to have lost, even if he was going to go back down south in January, we could have waited to near the time, perhaps picked up another loan, perhaps, you know, looked at somebody else, rather than signing a goalkeeper to warm the bench for 3 or 4 months. And, you know, as you said, everybody, I don't know anybody who thought it was a good signing, but, you know, that was just another particularly bizarre moment in the tenure of Ian Barraclough.
The curious case about it was that Sampson kind of worked his release from Kilmarnock, clearly with a... I don't think you would work your release from any club without knowing that you had something in the pipeline. With Sampson, it was obviously Motherwell, so you kind of wonder what the lure of coming to Firth Park was, because he's been led astray if he was told he was going to get first team football, that's for sure.
That's also a good point, because I never even really considered that. You know, he's, as you say, he was sitting on the Lanark's bench, and, you know, he's came here to sit on our bench as well, so I hadn't even considered that.
That's a bizarre one. The first couple of months of the season, after what was a very encouraging start up at Inverness on the opening day, didn't really, it kind of panned out very much like when we were poor the previous season. After winning the opening game, we lost the next four, picked up a few points, a home win against Kilmarnock and a draw against Ross County, followed by a really dismal display at Aki's again. Then a loss to Morton in the Cup, and that was Ian Barraclough's tenure over.
Yay!
That was me trying to summarise it in the most painless way possible.
Well, I mean, I noticed you didn't even mention the East Fife League Cup game. I mean, that itself was absolutely chronic. You know, we were talking about Lionel Ainsworth in the podcast this week. Sublime to the ridiculous again. From, you know, months previous he was scoring a great goal to put us 3-0 up at Ibrox. A few months later he's celebrating wildly as we go ahead against East Fife in extra time in the League Cup. It was a horrible, horrible night, and at no point did we deserve to go through in that tie at all.
It sort of sounds a lot like Morton then, because again, that was a horrible, horrible night. There was no real, although we didn't go through, there was no real sort of way we were ever going to go through. We scored the 92nd minute equaliser or something like that as well. You know, it was close to the end at least anyway. And again, our support went mental. And that, you know, don't get me wrong, I gave it a wee cheer and thought, let's get another goal here. But when I turned around, everybody was still celebrating. There was people in the park and everything. And I thought, are you kidding me on? Calm down here.
To be fair, in that East Fife game, the only reason we actually went through is because Nathan Austin, East Fife, had to get taken off because I just presume he didn't have the stamina to play against a full-time side. And when he did, he got a standing ovation from just about every Motherwell fan in the stadium. It was surreal. But, you know, let's not focus on the dire parts.
The thing, I know there's not much time for sentiment in football, but the Barraclough, he brought us the two great games at Ibrox. He'll be remembered for that, no doubt, but he seemed like a nice guy. It just never really worked out, did it? From early doors, I thought it was quite apparent that it wasn't working. The playoff win bought him more time. I was kind of willing to give it a second chance, and the start of the season just showed very quickly that he wasn't up to managing. I don't know whether he underestimated Scottish football. He certainly has brought in some good players, some very good players, in the case of Marvin Johnson, and and Louis Moat particularly, but the club acted at completely the right time for me.
Well, I think the thing with Barakoff is I don't think there'll be any Motherwell fan who would hold any genuine malice or ill feeling towards him. You know, as you said, he was a nice enough guy, made some terrible signings, made a couple of decent ones, was largely quite poor performance-wise, but gave us, you know, the fantastic two legs that we've already spoke about. You know, I think it's one of those ones where he just wasn't good enough, unfortunately. You know, a few brownie points for picking Stegosaurus as his favourite dinosaur, but other than that, he just wasn't a good enough manager, and I don't think anybody's particularly... You know, I don't think anybody will feel any negativity towards him. I think it was just one of those cases where he's came in, we've picked the wrong man. You know, at the time, I think we, amongst all Motherwell fans, were screaming for Van der Gag when we picked Barraclough. We got it wrong, and eventually we seem to have got it right.
I think as well, as you said, Sparra, you know, you were on his back pretty early, and at the time I remember being like... You know, gave him a bit of time. You know, it was only so much, only so long, whatever. And then, you know, it seemed to, as you said, there was times where he then went on that run of three or four games where he had decent results, good performances, and then again it would just go, you know, fall on his face again. Essentially, everybody who was calling for his head after, you know, a month was correct, but you know, maybe not in that instance. I don't feel, but you know, as you say, I don't like the thought that he underestimated. I don't think anybody comes into any job really and underestimates some. You know, I just think that, as you say, he wasn't good enough, unfortunately, for himself and of course our club at the time. But you know, he'll always be remembered for the 2 days against Rangers and Louis Moat, essentially. So you know, it's.
I don't agree either that you know, after a month that there were those, I know what you're saying, you know, there was threads and stuff and Steelman online, but unfortunately very rarely do you get a new manager when you don't get folk, you know, immediately saying from the off that they want them out or something like that. It's that kind of, you know, there might be genuine opinion involved as well, but a lot of it's that kind of one-upmanship, you know, that, all right, we'll say now that we want rid of them, so if it all goes well, then great. If it doesn't, then we can say we told you so. So I don't buy into that at all. Some of the power quite early on in Barraclough's reign, I don't buy that, you know, they weren't ultimately right or anything like that. At the time, you know, it was a lot of nonsense, to be honest.
Aye, because the same... bullshit appeared about three games into McGee's time, and yeah, that was just almost to be, so you can cast it all the way back to, or all the way forward to when he does eventually leave or eventually get sacked, and
well, that's
people
the thing,
can sit
the
there and say
Barraclough
I was right
was.
All along, and that I don't think that was the case with Barraclough though. I wrote a blog after the Accies game, which I'm. We've already agreed on that was absolutely abysmal, and that was the point where I thought there is no way back for this guy.
No, I don't.
Ultimately, I was proven wrong because there was a way back. Beating Rangers over two legs 6-1 was a way back, but he managed to find his way back to the same point, losing at New Douglas Park and having no way back. And the Morton game just kind of was a final nail in the coffin there.
No, I just think it's, you know, specifically the design of football forums and things like that. You know, you talk about that wee period we went through at the tail end of last season, and everybody would have been thinking, oh, great, we've turned the corner, we're brilliant, we're doing fantastic. Then as soon as we lose a game or as soon as something goes wrong, suddenly someone's went on to Steelman Online and tracked down the Barraclough out thread so they can post on it. And it's that kind of thing, I think, that's a bit, you know, it's almost as though people say, I'm not saying it's across the board, I'm sure there are folk who will have said, no, I don't think his track record's good enough. We said that when we were, you know, choosing between Barraclough, Van der Gag, etc. I think we kind of said that, well, he's had success in the Irish League, but I do believe that Van der Gag is better because of X, Y, and Z. But I just think that there is at times, you know, we've been in Steelman Online for, you know, a decade or something like that. There are those who will purposely sow these seeds quite early on so that, you know, they're Motherwell fans. So if the manager goes on to be a success, then they can enjoy that. And if he goes on to be a failure, they can, you know, get their rocks off as going, well, look, I told you this like 6 months ago. So I think there was an element of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, the results speak for itself. You know, he had to go, and it's as simple as that.
Certainly.
So a few weeks passed with interim manager Stephen Craigan, and then eventually that led us to the point where what can be said is a decision that divided the support, the return of Mark McGee as manager. Jay, it was quite extreme in some quarters, the reaction to the re-arrival, the return, that's a better word.
the re-arrival. the re-arrival of the Jedi.
My thesaurus hasn't got any better over the course of the year. It was very extreme in certain quarters. Some saying they wouldn't be back. I would like to actually see how many of these people have actually stuck to their word and not returned. Now that the team are doing well under Mark McGee, that would be an interesting kind of podcast poser for a future date. But the Celtic game aside, we have moved forward a great deal in the short period of time that Mark McGee's been in charge. And we'll kind of just again brush right through the period between October and December. The way that we've finished the year gives us great hope going into 2016.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, I was certainly against Mark McGee being given the job again. I think that, you know, on a basic level, I've always sort of said that if you leave as a football manager, you don't go back. At the end of the day, if you're no longer the football manager of a club, it's either because you didn't want to be there anymore or because you weren't good enough. Both of those, to me, seem pretty good reasons not to be offered the job again. I didn't like the way he conducted himself. When he was Motherwell manager at the time, I thought he showed a great amount of disrespect to the club with the way, you know, just basically hurled himself out to every job going. I didn't like it. I thought that there was enough disrespect shown there that he shouldn't have been offered the job this time round. And, you know, we could go on and win the cup and stuff like that, and I will still believe that, you know, that there were certain things done last time that I don't agree that he should have been offered the job for, you know, this time around. I don't like him. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate the job he's done. He has done a very, very good job, particularly because you're talking about a manager going into a squad. Yes, he's returning to a club that he knows well, but you know the team is overflowing with players like we've already spoke about. There's no real consistency in team selection. He has to get used to them. You know, I've said before, one bugbear was the fact that he did use those first few games as friendlies. You know, Marvin Johnson up at Ross County and things like that. But, you know, as much as I dislike the guy, and as much as I, you know, I can be a Motherwell fan without supporting him personally, I still appreciate fully that he's doing a fantastic job now. We seem to be on a really good run. We seem to be playing great football. He seems to have found what he wants to do with the team. And I think that when you know, it's not even his team yet. I think that's something to be positive about. You know, we're going into the January transfer window. He'll know who he wants to get rid of. You know, the rumblings are that there might be one or two players that he's got his eyes on and bringing in. So, you know, I'd like to think that things can get better. But I'd also like to think that, you know, the fans who have a problem with McGee, if there are any fans who said I won't be back, you know, you need to remember that you're not going to support Mark McGee. You know, it's the same way when people sort of say, oh, well, if you didn't like Stephen Pearson first time around, you must not have celebrated his goal. That's nonsense, because I don't go to celebrate Stephen Pearson's goals. I go to celebrate a Motherwell goal, the same way I go to support Motherwell rather than Mark McGee. So if there is anybody, and I kind of shared what you were hinting at there, Sparrow, I don't believe too many of those who said I won't be back have actually stuck to it. I think you'll find that the vast majority that I'm known to think of have never missed a game, because it was just kind of jumped up nonsense. But, you know, if there is anybody who thought, well, Mark McGee's the manager, I'm not going back, I don't like that, because you're not going to support Mark McGee, you're going to support Motherwell. And thankfully, Mark McGee has been responsible for making that far more enjoyable at the moment.
Yeah, Buster, you were saying to us a few days ago that you were kind of a bit taken aback by the renewed optimism and almost excitement about going to the football again. It's a nice feeling to have back, though.
Certainly is. You know, especially the wee sort of mini run we're on just now, it's bringing back long forgotten memories of the last couple of seasons before the last couple, if that makes sense.
Just about as much as his re-return.
I don't know.
Re-arrival, sorry.
re-arrival. I don't know who wins there, but you know, other than the two games against the Highland League teams, where we were awful, and I think he came out and said, you know, we were awful. Other than that, I don't think there's really a complaint for any of the performances, certainly not any of the results. You know, you know what I mean? If in September somebody had said to you, we're going to go to Parkhead in a couple of months and we're going to win, you'd have laughed at them. But you know, the way the team's playing, I think he's installed a lot of confidence in them as well. You know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about fitness levels, but I think they look a lot fitter and things like we were saying, but I think it's more to do with their confidence. He's mentioned, you know, they were a fit bunch when he came in. Just to bring him back to, you know, as Jay was saying as well, Jay made it very clear he wasn't a fan of him, which is fine. You know, I know Jay goes to the fit bar, I know Jay goes to the fit bar. You know, there's also people, as Jay's and yourself pointed out, that say they'll not be back, but yeah, it's football, you know what I mean? It's a job, essentially. So, again, I heard Jay say, you know, if he doesn't want to be there, that's why he left, etc. But it happens in all walks of life. People come and go in all types of jobs. We've got 3 or 4 players, if not, actually, probably about 6 players in the squad who were here before they went somewhere else before coming back. Some of them, perhaps, in a worse manner than, you know, Martin McGee did, but there's nothing really made of that. There's nothing really made of, you know, Martin McGee the new when he's winning. I think the big tests sort of come if we lose a couple of games on the trot, you know, and we maybe slipped in the league wee, but you know, then you'll, as you say, you'll get your point scorers coming out and saying, "Ah, I can't tell you, he wasn't this and he wasn't that." But again, when he was appointed, I could see why. I wasn't sure if it was going to work. But I think, you know, it's been a stroke of genius for the club. As you said, it's not his players, but he's got them in, he's telling them what he wants, he's probably got them working on it constantly, and that's why it's starting to work. You know, he's probably in there telling them, you can do this, you can do that, you've got the ability to do this, you've got the ability to do that. And I think that's honestly why we're now seeing what looks like a different team with the very same players that we had, you know, three months ago. I think my only problem would be that he keeps trying to mould Theo Robinson into a player, and I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I've just kind of written down a few questions for you guys and just looking for quick fire answers, looking back over the course of the year. The first one I've got is win of the year, sorry. Best victory of 2015. Jay, if you wouldn't mind answering first, and then we'll get Buster's quick fire answer.
Well, it's going to be 3-1 at Ibrox, surely.
Buster?
Just to be different, I'll just choose the most recent win at Parkhead. I'm not saying that any of them were better than the other, although, you know, different reasons, things like that. But, you know, just to shake it up a bit, I'll say that.
I'll go for the 3-0 game. At Park.
I'm surprised Buster didn't use that one for his 3-2 defeat in Dingwall in February.
That's his biggest disappointment of the season. Biggest disappointment of the year.
Again, then I'll go. For me personally, it was Ross County away. You know, we were all in a bender basically for Jay's birthday, and that was the worst of tours or whatever in the weekend. So that sort of brought us all down to earth with a wee bump before we got back to the pub, basically.
I'll go with the Thistle game that we were talking about a little bit earlier, the Barraclough one, just after, you know, some fantastic results going to Fir Hill, massive support, and it was just a massive, massive letdown.
New Year's Day, for me, 5-0 against the Aggies. Wish I hadn't left the house. Goal of 2015...
Oofed. Pass down you go.
No, you're talking. As in, you know, what was the best, like a stunning goal, or, you know, what was...
You can interpret any way you want.
I'm trying to think then. Again, then I'm just going to have to take the most obvious one. The third goal at Ibrox. Everybody went mental. If Ainsworth had put in that fourth one, I'd have chose that because it would have emptied the place as well. But, you know, third one at Ibrox.
It's got to be Cammy Bell's goal at Firth Park. Beauty, absolute beauty.
I think you'll find it was on target. It was Marvin Johnson's
goal. I wish I had really actually thought of answers before asking the question, so I'm just going to go for Louis Moult's penalty at Parkhead.
Conor Grant, free kick, February.
Player of 2015.
Well, as I said earlier, when we were talking about signings, for me, over the piece, Stephen Pearson. I think that Louis Moult's been player of the year this season, but over the whole year, over 2015, it's got to be Stephen Pearson for me.
It's hard to disagree with that, but again, just to mix it up, I'll take Louis Moult. You know, he'll run his arse off for you, and he's got 10 or 11 goals, and you know, already it's before the halfway point, you know, in the year, so I'll take Louis Moult.
I can't see past Pearson, unfortunately. I think there's kind of honourable mentions for guys like Louis Moult, Marvin Johnson, even Lionel Ainsworth, who I think Joe McKelvey said in the podcast that he couldn't have foreseen the transformation in Ainsworth's effort and attitude. Deserves a mention, but I would say it's got to be Pearson for me.
Just to pick up on Ainsworth as well, Ainsworth over the last, you know, 2.5 years, whatever it is, has been an absolute great player for us. There was a point where he had, you know, maybe 2 or 3 month spell where it looked like he couldn't be arsed and was essentially shite. But, you know, his stats, his figures, you know, just when he plays, he's a player. So, you know, as you say, it's maybe an honourable mention for him there as well. But he did have a shite 3 months, basically, at one point.
Hopes for 2016, final question before I think we've got a quick remember well to do, and then we'll wrap it up because we've went well beyond an hour now.
Can I go on, Buster?
Well, my initial hope would be for a cup game because for some reason last year or last season the cup was played at the end of November. So we've got a cup game. So if we can put a wee run together, that'd be fantastic. Obviously, if we went on and won the thing, it would be great, but you know, if we mustered a wee run and got as far as the semis, you know, there's a world of good, I think.
Yeah, I think my hope would be that we just keep doing what we're doing at the moment. I think you know, we've seen enough in the last few weeks and then, you know, done enough to suggest that if we could actually keep this going, if this is now how we're going to play and it's not just, you know, a fluke like we were talking earlier about those games in the Barraclough season and things like that, if this is genuinely how we're going to keep playing, then, you know, I'll be delighted the next season because we will be there or thereabouts when it comes to the top six. And of course, I think every Motherwell fan would love a wee cup run as well. That'd be nice, particularly if we get to the final and we can see how many of those, if McGee's there, I'm not coming back, folk change their mind for one night only.
Mine would be just kind of a bit more of the same in terms of we've made a lot of progress towards the back end of 2015. We've got a good squad there. I believe we can push for the top six this season, but even if we are to fall short, if we continue to play a better brand of football that you enjoy going along to watch, I think that's half the battle. I don't mind getting beat. I've seen Motherwell get beat enough times to be, I wouldn't say immune to it. I still get disappointed, but I certainly don't take it that badly that it can ruin my weekend. If I see a good performance, then that's encouraging enough for me, and I really believe that we're going in the right direction, so I'm looking forward to what 2016 has to offer, that's for sure.
At least 8th and a wee cup run, then that'll do us all.
That would be a great end to the season, considering what we started with.
Exactly.
And it does demonstrate how easily pleased we are, it must be said. There's people with perhaps higher expectations and higher standards, but we're easily pleased. The remember well question for this week, Jay?
I don't want to dwell too much on it because it's, you know, it was just what is your favourite moment of the year, so it's kind of repetitive with a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. You know, I'll just name one or two. Richie Stevens says Lionel scoring the third. Stephen Smiley says McCall trying to get the ball at Ibrox. That is a good one, actually. That was quite good. Who else? We've got Bobby Steelman, Lionel's goal at the Temple of Doom. Stuart Tweedley says the second leg, a left winger hits one in hope. when it spins skywards off a defender. Some bellend jumps at me and says, "Tweed, that's in." We all know what happened next. Bedlam. David Fraser says all of the above, which I think we'd agree with. Bruce O'Neill agrees with your earlier point, Sparra, and says Tony Straker as being the highlight of the year. Dave Scott, yeah, again, Lionel's goal to put his 3-0 up right in front of the Well fans, sheer bedlam. Ian says, does the 10 minutes after the game at Ibrox count? Obviously referring to the twist and shout, which I think's went viral now.
Yeah, good point. That was a good 10 minutes as well, right?
Callum Benson says, watching the third goal at Ibrox on a live internet stream. Don't know how that must have been horrible. So we've got Ian Winning says, step over leading up to the opener at Fir Park. Big Lee and Zaliuskas didn't have a clue where the ball was. Ricky Mullen, Lionel scoring the third. Kazol and Fizoxi says, took a deflection, immortal words. And then, of course, our friends at the Buy Them In Aberdeen podcast just said Cammy Bell and a vine of that great goal. So yeah, that was it. So all stuff that we've kind of repeated. I'm sure Busters is that game in February at Ross County, but you know, everybody saying exactly what you would expect them to say.
I've got to end this with a genuine concern. Did Bukes not get back to you in this one?
That is a good point, actually. I think this may be the first ever Remember Well question that Bukes has not responded to.
Right, well,
either that or I've accidentally deleted it.
He sent me a text, actually. What he says here is, Conor Grant's free kick against Ross County in February.
We knew we could rely on him. Well, guys, thanks very much. That was depressing at points, but I'm always quite happy to reflect on victories over Rangers and the fact that we managed to finish the season with that win at Celtic Park as well. It's been a bittersweet 2015, but we can look ahead to next year with a fair bit of optimism.
Oh, definitely. I think we're all motivated and actually looking forward to going to games again, which speaks for itself.
As but, you says, the you know, the foundations are there, and you know, if we finish 8th in this year, we can use that as a, you know, a stepping stone, basically.
You've been listening to the MFC Podcast Review of 2015. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye. I'm in the sky too. I'm not afraid to die.